And now, Barron's ranked top 100 independent advisors. It's time for Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Hansen McClain's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hansen.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial futures. And we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. Now, in all fairness, sometimes we're live on the weekends. Sometimes we're recording on the weekends. But
in all fairness, we're here. You're listening. If you call in, whether during the show or outside of the show, you can ask the question at any time.
That's right. And we'd love to take your call. And if you would like to be part of the program, if you've got a question regarding an investment you're considering, perhaps someone's pitching you an investment, you're looking at some financial planning, trying to figure out what's the best way to transition into retirement, or is retirement even feasible for you, or how to even start saving for retirement, whatever the case may be, we'd love to hear from you, as long as it's somewhat related to money, I should say. Our contact number to be part of Hans McClain's Money Matters, quite simple, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-H-A-N-S-O-N, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And we'll get you on the air. We got a great program lined up. Of course, we'll take some calls. Also, I'll talk about my recent trip to Cuba.
I'd like to hear. We have not talked
about your trip to Cuba. We'll talk about some financial things. Just returned on a week-long people-to-people trip where I talked to a lot of different people over there and talked interesting business perspectives. Well, business is that way, the right way to put it. Interesting perspectives on some things. We'll share that with you. And we'll talk some about I'll talk a little bit about the how investors can now participate in small offerings similar to Kickstarter, but for angel investors.
Yeah. So Scott and I, just as a matter, we do our own research coming into this show, and oftentimes when we show for the show prep, we collect pieces of information between the show and we share it right before we go on the air to kind of review. And oftentimes, we have the same list. And
that was one of you. It's an interesting one. So we'll talk about that, what it means to you, what it might mean for other investors.
And why this will see an increase of scams and fraudulent business offerings that will be...
You'll start seeing them.
I guarantee it.
Yep.
You'll see them on Facebook. You'll see them Google Ads. You'll see them everywhere where... you can invest just like the venture capital firms.
Yep, just like
except without the due diligence or the
audited financials. It'll be a venture, yeah. An adventure.
And the capital will go somewhere.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk some about that. And, of course, take your calls, questions, and myself and Pat here. We've been financial advisors for 25 years and doing this program for over 20 years. So if you're new to the program, welcome. If you've been listening for 20-plus years, thank you kindly. Probably not too many people have been listening for 20 plus years, but we might have a couple.
Yeah, a few.
Maybe some. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Actually, if you've been listening for 20 plus years, we'd probably love to hear from you as well, just the way, thank you, and we'll give a nice, give you a copy of my book.
There we go.
Personal Decision
Points. Yeah, so if you've been listening for, well, they don't have to listen for 20 years. Let's take it. Just call the show if you have a question. Let's not make this complicated.
And if you want to get a copy of my book, by the way, Personal Decision Points, look, if you are within 5 years or so of retirement or nearing retirement, I highly recommend you get my book. Why? Because I wrote it. No, because it goes through our 7 personal decision point process that Hans McClain uses. And we find it very helpful, and other readers have found it helpful as well.
I've been reading your reviews on Amazon.
Well, thank you.
Reviews you wrote about yourself.
I didn't do that. You can go to, if you go to moneymatters.com/book, there's a promo code there for a discount on the book. It's moneymatters.com/book. So anyway, let's start going to the calls. 888-2-HANSEN to join the program. Let's start off in Lakewood, Colorado with Gary. Gary, you're with Hansen McClain.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Scott. I enjoyed the book. I haven't read it all, but it's really informative. I appreciated the book.
Well, thank you. How can we help you, Gary? Pat's with
Got
me, too,
question.
By the way.
So.
I'm That's okay, Gary. I'm not used to compliments. The 5 kids I grew up with. They weren't passed around very often.
I hear you. That's right. It's mine. No, my question relates to some property we bought back in like 69. I was still in college.
How did you buy property when you were in college?
Well, we worked on a farm, so we had a lot of resources in terms of land and timber and that sort of thing, and it wasn't that expensive back then like it is now.
Got it.
So I worked it in the summer and paid it off like in 3 years.
Oh, good for you.
Wow.
Good for you. What are you thinking of doing with this property?
Selling it. That was our retirement.
And what did you pay for this property?
Like $30,000.
And is it land or a house?
It's just land. Okay. It's raw land. It's just beautiful North Carolina, Western North Carolina property. Just beautiful.
And what do you think you could get for it?
Probably around $400,000 or so.
Okay.
And is it on the market now? Are you in a contract or?
It is. It's actually, we've got a contract on it for that. So,
okay.
We're pretty excited. You know, we'd never considered selling it. It was something I was hoping maybe even pass on to my grandkids, but we just decided to get rid of the tax burden and all that.
Now, have you calculated what you have to pay in capital gain taxes on this?
Yeah, that's going to be pretty steep. It looks like it's going to be about $80,000.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's just, you know, Uncle Sam gets his. I know that.
So you're gonna net $320. So your question for us is?
Yeah, what? I don't know if that's enough. I saw in Social Security, if you make it to 66, which I am, you're more likely to live to be like 85. So I've got about 20 years here, maybe.
And so you want to turn this into some retirement income is what it sounds like.
Income, I do. I want to pay off our house in 5 years.
What do you own your house now?
Only about 95.
And what's the interest rate on the house?
4.75.
What if we said for a portion of these dollars, we had a guaranteed investment? Now, very often we say guarantees in this, but we're going to say guaranteed 4.75%.
No risk whatsoever. You give us, let's say, $95,000, and I guarantee you I can get you 4.75% without any market risk at all. Any market risk. What would you think?
That would be outstanding.
All right.
Then pay off the mortgage.
Pay off number the mortgage. One. Pay off the mortgage. There you go.
But really, just pay it off.
Absolutely.
Right up front.
Just write a check.
Mm. Okay.
How much are your payments on that house?
Just a little over $600.
Yeah, so right there, that's going to save you $600 a month.
Yeah, actually more than that because you income that you make, you pay taxes on, and then you take the remainder and you make your mortgage payment. So
right.
So that's the first thing we would do because 4.75 is a relatively high interest rate on a mortgage in this environment.
It could now some might argue go out and refinance, but at this stage in life. We don't think having a mortgage is prudent at all.
Yeah, I've tried that. It only knocks the mortgage payment down maybe $30 or so. It's not much.
Oh, when you...
It's not a large amount.
Yeah, yeah. So you just want to pay the whole thing off.
I'd pay it off, and that would leave you with about $225,000. How much income are you hoping to generate off these investments?
You know, that's hard to say. We probably don't make enough on Social Security to get, you know, through each month. So I work in addition part-time. So, but it's a good part-time paying job. So I don't know how much longer I can keep doing that.
How much
I think $1,000 a month, something like that.
And how much, so you're working part-time now and not receiving Social Security. Is that correct?
No, I am getting Social
Security.
Oh, you
are? Okay.
I waited until 66 to retire.
Okay, and how much money are you making at your part-time job?
Probably about $1,500 a month or so.
You said $1,000 a month. If your mortgage was paid off, would you still need that much?
Probably not.
Yeah, so let's say your mortgage is paid off. That's $600 a month. And let's say $225,000, you had it in a diversified portfolio. Let's say you were withdrawing at 4% of that. That'd be about $9,000 a year.
Call it $750 a month is what that would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would really knock a big hole in the monthly allowances I would need.
Yeah, you're probably going to be net ahead. So what you want to do is I'd go one step further. I'd say, look, if you're working part-time and you can afford to not take any distributions from this.
Yeah, have the mortgage paid off.
Have the mortgage paid off. Live on the Social Security and the part-time income and let these dollars grow until you don't work anymore.
Yep.
And then start the distribution on that. So because you mentioned the seven personal decisions.
I'm going to throw one other thing out there completely off there. Another option is when you sell this, do a tax-free exchange into a rental home.
And oh, I love that.
Use the income from that.
Because we're real good on fixer-uppers. That's what we bought. We bought it at $100, and it's worth probably $170 now.
I mean, I don't know if...
Wow. Can you do that?
Oh, you certainly... Yeah. Oh, my gosh, you could do it. You could do it into two properties if you wanted to.
Yep. You could sell for $400,000, get two properties at $200,000. Maybe if they were a little more spendy than that, you had a small mortgage on each one.
You know, Scott,
if you have experience with rentals,
I'm going to make an admission here. I got off the phone with my handyman an hour ago, because I'm not very good at that sort of thing. But if you're good at that sort of thing, I don't think it's anything you should discount. Do you have any money anywhere else? Do you have money in IRAs or 401ks or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much?
Probably about 25.
Okay. So,
if you were my father or older brother, you've had experience with rentals, I would probably recommend doing a 1031 tax-free exchange.
At least for some, if not all of the money.
At least for some, if not all the money into a rental property. Maybe not all, maybe $300,000 of it.
Yeah, you take some money out.
Or 270 or something.
Take some
like
money
that.
Out, pay off the mortgage, and look at a rental for the rest. So I kind of like that idea, Scott.
Yeah, and that gives you you're comfortable with rentals, and you like that idea. I would look at that. You want to do that before your house goes before it's sold. You need to have an intermediary lined up ahead of time. But anyway, that's a lot of options to consider there, Gary. Appreciate your call. We're taking a quick break. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To have your questions answered by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, visit their website at moneymatters.com. Or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Back to one of the longest-running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson
Pat McLean here with the Blues Travelers.
Thank you. Pat is a... DJ
on the side part-time.
Wish you were. There's an ad. Remember there's an ad for some financial advisor?
Oh, yeah. It was giving a CFP board.
Yeah. You might have seen it on TV, the ad for a financial advisor, and they say why having looking for a certified financial planner is important, which we believe is as well. But there is actually, we're based out of Sacramento. There's actually a financial advisor in town that on his... I don't know if it's his LinkedIn page or one of those. He was boasting that he's a DJ on the weekends. And I remember I seen that commercial. I thought, I wonder if he took that off because
it was not complimentary.
Yeah. Anyway, to join us, if you want to call and got a question for us, like Gary did, it's 888-2-HANSON, 888-2-HANSON. And before we go back to calls, we said at the start that I was going to share my Cuba experience.
I'm interested.
Yeah, so I went to Cuba with my father.
It was always fun to travel with. How old is your dad?
He's 70. He's 18 going on 78. 78 really, going on 18.
He really is. I've traveled with Scott's father a couple times, and
it's
an experience.
He's
a teenager in an old man's body.
Yeah. Anyway, so, but we went to Cuba really because it's an interesting time in Cuba as... We've seen, Obama had recently made a trip there, as did the Pope. And it was just, I found it fascinating because Fidel Castro took over in 1959. So we've had 50 plus years of this communist country, socialist communist country. And they're starting to have some cracks in it and starting to loosen up some things. We're starting to see some capitalism, nothing like we see in China or Vietnam or some other places, but we're just starting to see a little bit of cracks. And it's interesting because we've all seen this.
So the cracks away from communism, socialism to capitalism.
Yeah. So for example, you can have a private farm. The government still owns the land, but they'll let you use it. As long as you sell 80% of your crop back to the government, you're free to do whatever you want with the remaining 20%. So one of the things, for example,
whatever the 80% they say is, who someone says is 80%.
That's, well, there you go, right? So
80% of poundage, 80% of dollar value, 80% of market.
I went and visited, what we visited is one, was a organic farm. And they learned how to become organic when, after the, during the 90s when the Soviet Union collapsed.
They couldn't buy anything.
They had, their trading partner was gone, and they didn't have any petroleum products. They didn't have any fertilizer. They had to kind of learn it. So they actually learned something. So anyway, just talk this tour of this organic farm, and just, we're being told how they're able to sell 20% to, but what, 2 weeks prior, the government just decided that they were going to lower the prices across the board.
That the government was paying for it.
Yeah. And I said, well, how are you going to survive then? We don't really know at this point. I said, so the government just sets the price. They just one day tell you the price changes. She says, yeah, that was their first.
And the inputs don't matter.
No.
What it costs them to grow, labor involved, nothing.
So then even during the week, our main, I guess, tour guide, for lack of a better words, we employed more. Everywhere you went, you had to hire some Cuban for a period of time. One thing I've discovered, everyone works for the state. The state owns everything. Everyone works for the state. But if you work for the state, you get about $30 a month.
So everyone.
So you got to have something going on the side. So even, for example, the doctors there get essentially tipped by their patients. So talking to the tour guy, says he tips them $10 or whatever, and he goes and sees them. Because they know that the doctors have no, they don't really make much money. So yeah. They get a little, but everything's that way.
And
so
if a big tip, the diagnosis is correct.
Midway during the week, I saw the tour guy said, oh, guess what? The price of milk and yogurt went down today. I said, what do you mean? Yeah, 30% reduction in price.
Just boom.
I said, yeah, just boom. The government just one day said, price of milk and yogurt is 30% less today. And I said, well, you understand that the supply of milk is going to decline here soon, right?
What did he say?
it didn't. It was one thing was interesting. So a lot of people had this kind of hope and optimism that we would see some market forces come into play and some capitalism. Yet at the same time, they were happy when the price of milk was reduced. And I heard this sort of comment often during the week. So, yes, we like the idea of capitalism. We like the idea of free markets. Oh, but we like our subsidized prices. We like our subsidized goods as well.
Well, that makes sense.
Well, I kind of understand it. But it was classic. So here,
it's that switchover is where it's that so crossover a, where the a, problems.
Here's
take
a
place.
Classic example of a controlled economy. So when Castro took over, he decided that it would be best to have cows used for milk production and not to be consumed. He thought it'd be great if we could have more milk for the children and the elderly. So why don't we pass a law that says it's now going to be illegal for you to kill a cow? You can't butcher a cow. So they had this whole, they made it a law, and then they said, they came out and said, look, we need the milk for our children, for babies, and for the elderly. So they kind of had this emotional plea. Then they said, look, the grain you're getting, and the veterinarians, they're all paid for by the state, so it's really not your cow. It's kind of the state's cow anyway. And so then they put all this pressure. Well, they found people were still butchering cows, so they hired a bunch of inspectors. They would go around the countryside and count cows. But then they found that some of these inspectors were taking some bribes on the side. So they hired inspectors of the inspectors.
And so who was telling you the story? One of your guides?
That, and then I read on the flight home, I read a book. I became fascinated with things. So then they had to create a whole bureaucracy, but it gets better. What was happening is they still found that cows were disappearing, whether they're being consumed. And people saying, oh, no, someone stole my cow, or no, my cow got hit by a car. So they thought, we don't know when people are lying, so why don't we just start fining people. If they lose a cow, whatever that happens, we will just charge them a certain dollar amount if something happens to one of their cows. So now owning a cow became a liability. Because what happens if my cow gets sick and died? I'm going to get fined. I don't want a cow.
And if you did have cows, you'd be hiding them.
This whole concept of state control to increase milk production backfired, and they found out they had much less milk production a couple years down the road.
Because they couldn't butcher a cow.
It was a classic. That thing happened across the whole economy. There's one gentleman in the hotel we're staying. He left 50 years ago as a young man. His father, they somehow were able to leave. He came back. He says, I'm pissed. Because he said, this place was beautiful when I was here. Everything essentially, there's been no, everything's been in disarray, decay.
No reinvestment in the infrastructure.
It's a disaster. But we are starting to see, you still can't, though, any foreign investment, it's all state, everything's still state owned. So it's a joint venture.
Cuba owns
51%, outside investor owns 49%.
Which is why the outside investors are afraid to actually.
Well, who's going to want to
go in there? Because, you know, one day they say.
We've seen this story before.
Yeah, yeah, they've seen this. Actually, they saw it at the same theater.
That's
Cuba.
Right, I know. But the people are wonderful. There's very little crime. Our main tour guides said, there's no crime, who weren't Cuban. They said, don't worry about it. There's no crime here. There's essentially no crime. There's no homeless. There's no one starving. Everyone's pretty poor as a group. Hardly any cars. You see these huge highways that were built.
On the 60s?
Yeah, before Castro took over.
Oh, in the 50s.
And now they are just.
Just probably beat to heck, huh?
No, because they haven't been used.
Oh.
They're wide open. You're on an 8-lane highway, and there's three cars you see.
Really?
By the way, you
went around in a van.
Yeah, there was 9 people from the States.
And you went around in a van. Was the van new, or was it a van?
Yes, the van was new. No.
Not a Havana van. It was a van.
Yeah, it was a Chinese-made van. You can buy new cars there, by the way. You got to get government permission, and the tariff is 8 times the value of the car. But that's why there's so many cars from the 50s.
But who can afford to buy a car?
Nobody. There's almost nobody.
Other than those people that are working in the underground economy. And if you buy a car, then the authorities realize that you're operating in the underground economy, or you wouldn't be able to buy a car.
Everyone operates in the underground economy there.
That's just the way
it is. And they're Fidel, most people don't even refer to him by name. It's him or them, the brothers. Or there's a little symbol. They put their 2 fingers on their shoulder, kind of a. Or the symbol of the beard. Well, you know, and they'll do a, like.
Because they show
a beard.
Anything negative about them?
Nobody says anything negative about them. And everyone talks about how great their education and healthcare system is. Everyone I met, everyone talked about how wonderful. Well, these things aren't going, but we've got great education and great healthcare.
And do they?
Well, they've certainly been told that their entire life. We have great education and great healthcare. So it's wow. It, from.
Well, that would make sense.
You know, I just find it interesting. We see, I think there are some, particularly some young people that might not understand free markets and the benefits that capitalism has provided to the globe. And you look at a state controlled economy at its extreme and it never works.
Yeah.
But yet they're still somehow.
But it would make sense that the administration, the Castro administration, would say our healthcare and education is great because it's not visible. You can't actually pull up a magazine and look at education and healthcare in another country.
Well, matter of fact, they supposedly have better healthcare than any of the other Latin American countries for their average.
They might.
Yeah.
They may.
Talking to an American journalist who'd lived there for 24 years, he said, I wouldn't have surgery here, but they're great. And they send their physicians all over the world, and they do some great humanitarian things. It's interesting. There are clearly some benefits to the system, but obviously not a lot of benefits. It'll be very interesting to see what happens over the next coming years as we see it open more to free economy. And from an economic perspective, I was fascinated by the experience. So it was an interesting trip. Anyway, we need to take a quick break. 888-2-HANSEN is our number. This is Hans McLean's Money Matters.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766.
Mm-hmm. helping you take the worry out of your retirement. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean. Scott, before we go to the calls at 888-2-HANSON, if you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON. You can also find us at moneymatters.com, or you can get this weekly podcast by going to iTunes.
Yes,
all those
Hanson McLean.
All those methods.
Follow me on Twitter at Scott Hanson CFP, or at Twitter at Hanson McLean.
There we go.
I don't know where.
That's enough places. I mean, we can't.
Snapchat.
So here's it's interesting. So we've talked a little bit on this show about the new Department of Labor rules and how they're applying to 401ks and IRAs, so that the fees are disclosed, and so now this has led to a whole new kind of argument as inside companies about what they're going to do with their 401ks. And here's the problem. So, and I feel bad for business owners. I was talking to our finance people internally today about our own 401k. You're out there running your business. There's a lot of competing factors, and you have a fiduciary responsibility to your employees for their retirement savings plan.
If you have a 401k.
Yes.
If you have medical, you've got medical plans to deal with and the rising costs. You have 401k, you've got all this regulatory burden and costs.
So the 401k is, and it's important to people. But why it follows the employer has never really made sense to me. But here's what the situation is now. Historically,
and here's what we'll be seeing.
Historically, what happens is a mutual fund would charge X amount of fees and then rebate some to the plan administrator.
To cover the cost.
To cover the cost. And the plan administrator cost on the average 401k in the United States makes up 18% of the total cost in the investment arena. So here's what the problem is.
That means these large companies, the way they're paying for it essentially is by having the participants
pay for it,
a portion of the cost, and, if not all.
And if you've got a large account balance, you're covering some of the costs for the lower account balances.
That's right.
Right? So the average American fee in a 401k right now is $64.
A year.
A year. So the question is, is that going to stay that way, or are you just going to bill each participant $64 out of their account, or is it going to be paid from the investments? And it can't really be paid from the investments because there's a disclosure issue with the investments. So you come to your new job and you put in, you know, $100 a month, and the first thing you see is, hey, here's a 401k administration fee of $64. Because right now it's spread across the assets.
That or the employer's going to cover the cost.
Or the employer's going to cover the
cost. Or you'll see less 401k plans adopted, and you'll see small companies say, forget this.
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it. And tell your employees, go set up an IRA. Yeah. This is exactly what you're going to see. We'll see less 401k plans as a result.
Yeah. And
it's unfortunate.
It will exacerbate the retirement savings problem that this nation faces.
I personally would like to see some equality in retirement savings, whether you work for a large employer, a small employer, self-employed, whatever the case, we should all have the opportunity to save the same amount on an annual basis.
Correct. Correct. If you work for a construction company that has three employees that make $125,000 a year, and then 15 employees that work administrative, and then you use contract labor,
you may not be able to contribute.
You may not be able to contribute anything.
Because of the top-heavy rules.
Correct.
Or if you work for a small company, and you're an engineer, you work for a small company that doesn't have a 401k, you're limited on IRA.
To the maximum contribution of $5,500 or $6,500
next,
a year.
Your buddy you went to college with is working the same exact job for a larger employer. He can contribute $18,000 a year to his 401k. Or 401k.
Makes all the sense in the world.
It's craziness. And here we see some more problems. Anyway, hopefully Congress will... We have such faith in Congress.
They'll fix it.
Yeah.
No worries.
We all love the government, and we're so pleased with all of our presidential choices that we know this is going to be taken care of in a short period of time. 888-2-HANSON to join the program. Let's take some calls here. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. We're talking with Deborah in Browns Valley, California. Deborah, are you with Hanson McLean?
Hello. Hi, gentlemen.
Hi, Deborah.
My question to you is, I'm actually not calling about the next step, needing the next step. I'm actually calling to get the first step.
Okay.
I'm 55 years old, and my husband is 50 years old. Both of us come from probably less benefit families that really were not set up financially at all. We haven't had training of any sort. In 1993, I was a victim of a violent crime, and for the most part, I would say that my life has been in escrow for 23 years.
So, I'm sorry.
So that being said, now having suffered what I call the Rumpelstiltskin effect, I've reanimated, and now it's time to get back on track. We've recently paid off our mortgage on our house.
Wow, good for you.
Well, you're doing well. Truly, you're doing well. Most people cannot say that at your age. That
ever.
Ever. Most people can't say that.
It's been a 5.5 year, pretty much a bet. We can do this in 5.5 years. No new vehicles, no vacations, no toys, no anything. Nose to the grindstone, pay the property off. Well, my last employer that would pay into Social Security and pay into a 401k and to pay into disability and that was in 1998. Well, so now I have a limited amount of Social Security anticipated, only to realize that in 15 years I'm only going to get an approximate 70%, you know, of anticipated Social Security. So I'm nowhere near a retirement age. My husband is 5 years younger than me. He's a member of the union, laborers union, and the operators union.
Okay.
He's expecting dual pensions. We have an annuity. We have $2,000 in debt.
And tell me about the annuity is through your husband's prevailing wage annuity. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And how much is the approximate value in that
annuity? It's like a 401k
for the rest of the listeners. It's kind of like a 401k. How much is the approximate value in there?
This is really going to probably appear seem very low. It's only $7,000.
Okay.
But that being said, we cashed out his previous annuity to put the down payment on our mortgage, on our purchase for our house.
Okay.
Which is now paid off.
So that in 5 years, that is what it has come to.
And what were you paying on the mortgage?
It's basically we were paying $1,100 a month.
Okay.
And can you...
So now we have that discretionary fund that we need to somehow get on rails to secure a better financial plan. And I don't know where to begin.
So... So you both have IRAs available to you, based upon your income. You might be a Roth IRA or regular IRA, but you can put in $6,500 a year, and your husband can put in $5,500 a year towards that.
65.
Oh, he's 50.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Now, how is it that I would be able to pay into an IRA?
Oh, your husband has income. You're not working, correct?
No, I have what I would call a micro, a home-based business.
Do you have any income?
We use that for our discretionary funding. It's cash, walking around money.
Got it.
Okay, so you don't report any taxable income for yourself?
No, probably one out of every 4 years I do declare a benefit. But other than that, no, I really don't claim.
But you could still do a spousal IRA. Unless your income's over, I think it's about $160,000, something like that. You can do a spousal IRA, and your husband can do a Roth IRA.
Okay.
Unless he has a 401k available to him, which he may.
Not that I'm aware of.
It doesn't sound like it.
Okay.
So I would do that.
Okay.
So you could put in $13,000 a year towards your retirement.
$13,000.
Which is essentially about what you've been paying.
Yeah.
You can do an IRA for yourself and a Roth IRA for him.
And you were paying $1,100 on your mortgage, which is $13,200 a year.
I get it.
And
very good. Now,
I would make those Roth IRAs as well.
Yeah, probably both Roth.
Prior to my checking out of society, I used to work for a company that did provide a 401k. And how would a person go about finding out if they have a floating 401k somewhere in the world?
Oh, wow. There's a your best place to start is with the California state of California.
The what office is the treasurer's office?
Google just Google around. There's lost. There's a lot. Just if you Google lost assets, first of all, there's a whole industry out there designed to take a third for finding it. So you can avoid them. The state will actually list assets that have been lost. It's the company can't just keep it. They've got to do something with it. So they.
I would start with that. And
there's billions that are in this.
And I would use a balanced fund for these contributions.
Or even a target date.
Yeah, I'd be comfortable with that. Okay. Yeah.
I'd use a low-cost index target date fund inside these.
In both of those. And then if you Google lost assets, state of California, yeah, you'll be able to see if your 401k has been turned into the state.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call.
But Deborah, you are, I think you're making all the right moves. It sounds like you had a long period of trauma, but you're out of that and got your house paid off, which is a huge step towards financial independence for retirement. And if you just take those dollars and apply them to some retirement savings, I think you'll be well on the way for your first step, as you like to call it here. We're taking a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. Can't always catch Money Matters on the radio each week? Get a podcast of the show delivered to your device every week. Visit moneymatters.com. Now back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
That's right. Hey, if you want to join us, 888-2-HANSON, before we do that, we had talked at the beginning of the program about this opportunity that the average investor is going to have now to invest in small startup companies.
I don't know if you call it the average, the more well-heeled investor.
What do you mean?
Well, it's
for an non-accredited.
Annual income's at least $200,000.
No, that's the accredited investor.
Oh, you're right. You are right, Scott.
Yeah, so typically what happens in small startup private companies, there's been rules on it that only accredited investors can invest in.
And an accredited investor, someone whose income is over $200,000 and a net worth of $1 million.
I've always thought that it sounds a bit discriminatory on that, but that's just how the rules have been. You can't... as a small investor, unless you go through all these regulations and become a public company, you've got to only raise money from accredited investors. And in 2012, there was the Jumpstart Our Business Startups Act, Jobs Act, 2012 Jobs Act. And what it created was the opportunity for companies to raise money directly, to individual investors. This is very much if you consider how, say, Kickstarter works.
Yes.
And I've never personally given any money to Kickstarter. Although I have GoFundMe somebody. I did a GoFundMe for something. $50.
Well, that was that's charitable. You weren't looking for a return.
An emotional return.
Yeah, okay. How'd that work out for you?
I still feel so good about it. No, but this is for this is for profit's sake.
Well, that's what the aim is.
Yes.
But what's going to happen with this?
These are for small businesses, those that are raising $1 million or less, which $1 million is still a lot of money. But
and the new rule, it's called regulation crowdfunding. It allows private companies to advertise shares to sale to anyone, regardless of your income.
Yep.
And you can invest between $2,000 and $100,000 in this crowdfunding. So what we're going to see from this, it will be a cottage industry.
Yes.
Run mostly by gypsies.
Come on. that was derogatory to a whole...
I apologize. But not your ethnic. I'm not talking about ethnic background. But what they're going to do is they're going to start raising money for these great business opportunities, which whether you're qualified to actually determine whether it's good or bad, the stories will be good.
And I tell you what, they could bury inside a business plan on page 48 somehow some management fees. So someone could say, oh, we've got this great opportunity. Here's what we're hoping to do. We're going to do this and that. And then somewhere buried in it, you find that, oh, by the way, there's $100,000 a year management fee, regardless of what the company's making a profit or not.
Yes.
Right? So they say, well, we disclosed it. It was on page 48 here. And they're going to lure investors in, smaller investors that haven't been had a poor experience. Right? And I've always said one of the best things for investors is to lose money on something.
Early in your
year. Yes, hopefully early in your year.
And not a lot.
And not a lot. Unfortunately, some of these people, it's going to be a lot of money for them because they're not accredited investors. And you're going to see companies that will be raising money for these business plans that they may never even have a
plan.
May never even have any sort of idea to make a profit. They're just doing it to try to get your money.
So they're going to work through funding portals. More than a dozen websites are preparing to enter the business. Things like Crowdboarders, Flash Funders, NextSeed, Seed Invest, Start Engine, Zacks Invest.
And we're not saying these are all bad websites.
No.
And some of these will be very most will be legitimate companies.
That most of them will be.
The majority will fail, as in most startups.
As most startups do. But the problem is that they're going to come across to you as the way you can invest, just like the venture capital firms.
Yep, or like the rich people. Here's your own chance for private equity.
And the problem with it is if
this
you
is
can't
how the Rockefellers got rich.
If you can't discern what's good or bad, it will normally turn out bad for you.
Yeah, we would be.
We see them. So Scott and I, we've owned a number of companies together. We get them all the time. People pitching us business ideas.
Oh my God!
I remember one that just said they sent it to me. And he said, this is the greatest thing ever. And I read it and I said, well, you get paid 20% of gross sales. How's that work out for the investor?
20% of gross sales.
How's that work out for the investor? If you get paid on sales, it doesn't matter whether the company ever makes money. You, as the person that started the company, gets paid 20% of gross sales. So yeah. it's fraught with problems.
Yeah.
And what we'll see, mark my words, 5 years from now, you'll hear these stories about this little old lady, this young man. They invested their life savings with their friend. They knew because X, Y, and Z. And they'll come back and change this legislation.
You'll see hearings on Capitol Hill with the congressman just looking.
How'd this happen? Well, and you'll see this. They will repeal this in 5 years.
Yeah, and it just the last couple weeks ago came to where it's now legal. So it was. It hasn't been legal up until now. Now it is.
Well, I love the title in the New York Times. The article was called New Crowdfunding Rule Lets Small Fry Swim with Sharks. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, we're not all. Who's the Mr. Wonderful? On the. Do you ever watch the Shark Tank?
Oh, yeah. I do watch the Shark Tank.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Mr. I mean, some of those guys are pretty bright.
Yeah. I don't know who Mr. Wonderful is.
The bald guy.
Okay.
My next one.
Anyway, be careful. Be careful.
Yeah.
Be very, very careful.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-888-2-HANSEN. We're talking with Richard. Richard, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes. So I got a question. My mom recently suffered from dementia, and I had to put her into an assisted living home as of December 14th.
I'd like to
sell all of her assets to keep her in the home. She gets a retirement and an SSI for around $3,000 a month, and the home's about $5,000 a month. And since I sold all of her assets, she was refied the house, so we owed a little bit of money on it. And I received probably about $150 after everything's said and done.
So you
and I got it.
Hold on, back up. You sold the house?
Did you sell the house or refi the house? Which one?
Oh, it was refied, and then I sold it.
Okay.
Because mom refied it. I couldn't afford to keep her in the home and pay for the refi on the home.
Got it.
Of selling all of her assets to put her in a home. My concern now is with the money that's left over, just watching it dwindle away on mom's care. You know, if there's an short-term investment or something that's, you know, sensible to use that some of that money.
How much are you taking out a month? Out of this, but
a couple
about
thousand.
2,000.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how much money is in the account right now?
About 150 in the savings.
So you got 6 years on the tops.
Right.
So here's the challenge you've got. You've got, obviously, this is a
There's lots of challenges, yeah. But here's the financial challenge. The answer to your question about should you invest this in something that may have a potential for a higher rate of return.
And it's a tough environment because it's not like we can go buy CDs at 5% like we could just a few years ago, right? I mean, it's the Federal Reserve with the policy that we've got in place right now with such low interest rates, it essentially it penalizes seniors, it penalizes retirees, it penalizes like your mother because there was a time when $150,000 you can go get a decent return, but it's so challenging now. The issue you've got,
the money dwindling away with her care.
That's correct.
Expensive for elder care, and I couldn't take care of her.
Yeah, and so if she lives more than 6 years, then after it's out, then you're looking for some sort of state sponsored place, right?
So the answer to the question is, it's in the right place, because what you said is for a higher rate of return. And the question is it worth the risk? Anything that you invest dollars that are anything that isn't bank insured or a U.S. government short-term bond fund has risk associated with that. And that risk means it could, you know, every investment is based on timelines. And we don't know whether your timeline, we know that the longest it is 6 years. And the question is it worth taking the risk? What happens if you take and we put it in a balanced portfolio and the markets are off and it falls by 15%? Now your 150, right, is now down to approximately $127,000 because of market conditions. How would you react to that?
I mean, your time horizon on this is relatively short.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
If it were myself, I would keep mom's How money old's your mom? In the bank.
78.
Is she in good health otherwise?
Not really. The dementia is really tearing her up pretty bad. It's caught on.
Oh, it's terrible to watch too. It's absolutely terrible to watch.
It's the worst. It's the worst.
Yeah, we have clients. We have clients that we've worked with for 20 plus years that you see this to the spouse.
We deal with this all the time with people like yourself that aging parents and then we have clients that similar situations too. So, I mean,
my father passed. So it's just mom left now.
Yeah.
I mean, the one benefit is there are assets here where she's not on state and there's not a facility to take.
Yeah, for what you're paying, it sounds like she's in a nice enough place. So I would leave it exactly where it's at.
Yeah, I'm sorry about it, Richard. There's not a lot of options there. It's just, it's tempting though. It is tempting regardless whether you're in Richard's situation trying to help an aging parent or your own retirement situation. It's not an easy time with interest rates so low. We are out of time. That music means that we are out of time. We are here every weekend at the same time at this station. You could also get a podcast of this at iTunes or at moneymatters.com. Just visit moneymatters.com. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.